be his mind playing tricks on him. But he swore he saw the word wicked scrawled down its rounded back in large green letters. Something so strange had to be investigated. Thomas sprinted after the scurrying spy, and in a matter of seconds he entered the thick copse of trees, and the world became dark. Chapter 10. He couldn't believe how quickly the light disappeared. From the glade proper, the forest didn't look that big, maybe a couple of acres. Yet the trees were tall with sturdy trunks, packed tightly together, the canopy up above thick with leaves. The air around him had a greenish, muted hue, as if only several minutes of twilight remained in the day. It was somehow beautiful and creepy all at once. Moving as fast as he could, Thomas crashed through the heavy foliage, thin branches slapping at his face. He ducked to avoid a low-hanging limb, almost falling. Reaching out, he caught hold of a branch and swung himself forward to regain his balance. A thick bed of leaves and fallen twigs crunched underneath him. All the while, his eyes stayed riveted on the beetle blade scuttling across the forest floor. Deeper it went, its red light glowing brighter as the surroundings darkened. Thomas had charged 30 or 40 feet into the woods, dodging and ducking and losing ground with every second, when the beetle blade jumped onto a particularly large tree and scooted up its trunk. But by the time Thomas reached the tree, any sign of the creature had vanished. It had disappeared deep within the foliage, almost as if it had never existed. He'd lost the sucker. "Shuck it," Thomas whispered, almost as a joke. Almost. As strange as it seemed, the word felt natural on his lips, like he was already morphing into a glader. A twig snapped somewhere to his right, and he jerked his head in that direction. He stilled his breath, listened. Another snap, this time louder, almost like someone had broken a stick over their knee. "Who's there?" Thomas yelled out, a tingle of fear shooting across his shoulders. His voice bounced off the canopy of leaves above him, echoing through the air. He stayed frozen, rooted to the spot, as all grew silent, except for the whistling song of a few birds in the distance. But no one answered his call, nor did he hear any more sounds from that direction. Without really thinking it through, Thomas headed toward the noise he'd heard. Not bothering to hide his progress, he pushed aside branches as he walked, letting them whip back to position when he passed. He squinted, willed his eyes to work in the growing darkness, wishing he had a flashlight. He thought about flashlights and his memory. Once again, he remembered a tangible thing from his past, but couldn't assign it to any specific time or place, couldn't associate it with any other person or event. Frustrating. "Anybody there?" he asked again, feeling a little calmer since the noise hadn't repeated. It was probably just an animal, maybe another beetle blade. Just in case, he called out, "It's me, Thomas, the new guy." "Well, second newest guy." He winced and shook his head, hoping now that no one was there. He sounded like a complete idiot. Again, no reply. He stepped around a large oak and pulled up short. An icy shiver ran down his back. He'd reached the graveyard. The clearing was small, maybe 30 square feet, and covered with a thick layer of leafy weeds growing close to the ground. Thomas could see several clumsily prepared wooden crosses poking through this growth, their horizontal pieces lashed to the upright ones with a splintery twine. The grave markers had been painted white, but by someone in an obvious hurry. Gelled globs covered them, and bare streaks of wood showed through. Names had been carved into the wood. Thomas stepped up, hesitantly, to the closest one, and knelt down to get a look. The light was so dull now that he almost felt as if he were looking through black mist. Even the birds had quieted, like they'd gone to bed for the night, and the sound of insects was barely noticeable, or at least much less than normal. For the first time, Thomas realized how humid it was in the woods, the damp air already beading sweat on his forehead, the backs of his hands. He leaned closer to the first cross. It looked fresh and bore the name Stephen, the N extra small and right at the edge because the carver hadn't estimated well how much room he'd need. Stephen, Thomas thought, feeling an unexpected but detached sorrow. What's your story? Chuck annoy you to death? He stood and walked over to another cross, this one almost completely overgrown with weeds, the ground firm at its base. Whoever it was, he must have been one of the first to die, because his grave looked the oldest. The name was George. Thomas looked around and saw there were a dozen or so other graves. A couple of them appeared to be just as fresh as the first one he'd examined. A silvery glint caught his attention. It was different from the scuttling beetle that had led him to the forest, but just as odd. He moved through the markers until he got to a grave covered with a sheet of grimy plastic or glass, its edges slimed with filth. He squinted, trying to make out what was on the other side, then gasped when it came into focus. It was a window into another grave, one that had the dusty remnants of a rotting body. Completely creeped out, Thomas leaned closer to get a better look anyway, curious. The tomb was smaller than usual. Only the top half of the deceased person lay inside. He remembered Chuck's story about the boy who'd tried to rappel down the dark hole of the box after it had descended, only to be cut in two by something slicing through the air. Words were etched on the glass. Thomas could barely read them. Let this half-shank be a warning to all. You can't escape through the box hole. Thomas felt the odd urge to snicker. It seemed too ridiculous to be true. But he was also disgusted with himself for being so shallow and glib. Shaking his head, he had stepped aside to read more names of the dead when another twig broke, this time straight in front of him, right behind the trees on the other side of the graveyard. Then another snap, then another, coming closer, and the darkness was thick. "Who's out there?" he called, his voice shaky and hollow. It sounded as if he were speaking inside an insulated tunnel. "Seriously, this is stupid." He hated to admit to himself just how terrified he was. Instead of answering, the person gave up all pretense of stealth and started running, crashing through the forest line around the clearing of the graveyard, circling toward the spot where Thomas stood. He froze, panic overtaking him. Now only a few feet away, the visitor grew louder and louder, until Thomas caught a shadowed glimpse of a skinny boy limping along in a strange, lilting run. "Who the he—" The boy burst through the trees before Thomas could finish. He saw only a flash of pale skin and enormous eyes, the haunted image of an apparition, and cried out, tried to run, but it was too late. The figure leaped into the air and was on top of him, slamming into his shoulders, gripping him with strong hands. Thomas crashed to the ground. He felt a grave marker dig into his back before it snapped in two, burning a deep scratch along his flesh. He pushed and swatted at his attacker, a relentless jumble of skin and bones cavorting on top of him as he tried to gain purchase. It seemed like a monster, a horror from a nightmare, but Thomas knew it had to be a glader, someone who'd completely lost his mind. He heard teeth snapping open and closed, a horrific clack, clack, clack. Then he felt the jarring dagger of pain as the boy's mouth found a home, bit deeply into Thomas's shoulder. Thomas screamed, the pain like a burst of adrenaline through his blood. He planted the palms of his hands against his attacker's chest and pushed, straightening his arms until his muscles strained against the struggling figure above him. Finally, the kid fell back. A sharp crack filled the air as another grave marker met its demise. Thomas squirmed away on his hands and feet, sucking in breaths of air, and got his first good look at the crazed attacker. It was the sick boy. It was Ben. Chapter 11. It looked as if Ben had recovered only slightly since Thomas had seen him in the homestead. He wore nothing but shorts, his whiter-than-white skin stretched across his bones like a sheet wrapped tightly around a bundle of sticks. Rope-like veins ran along his body, pulsing and green, but less pronounced than the day before. His bloodshot eyes fell upon Thomas as if he were seeing his next meal. Ben crouched, ready to spring for another attack. At some point, a knife had made an appearance, gripped in his right hand. Thomas was filled with a queasy fear, disbelief that this was happening at all.
Ben!
Thomas looked toward the voice, surprised to see Albie standing at the edge of the graveyard, a mere phantom in the fading light. Relief flooded Thomas's body. Albie held a large bow, an arrow, cocked for the kill, pointed straight at Ben.
Ben, Albie repeated. Stop right now, or you ain't gonna see tomorrow.
Thomas looked back at Ben, who stared viciously at Albie, his tongue darting between his lips to wet them. What could possibly be wrong with that kid? Thomas thought. The boy had turned into a monster. Why?
If you kill me,
Ben shrieked, spittle flying from his mouth, far enough to hit Thomas in the face.
You'll get the wrong guy.
He snapped his gaze back to Thomas.
He's the shank you want to kill.
His voice was full of madness.
Don't be stupid, Ben,
Albie said, his voice calm as he continued to aim the arrow.
Thomas just got here. Ain't nothing to worry about. You're still bugging from the changing. You should have never left your bed.
He's not one of us,
Ben shouted.
I saw him. He's bad. We have to kill him. Let me gut him.
Thomas took an involuntary step backward, horrified by what Ben had said. What did he mean, he'd seen him? Why did he think Thomas was bad? Albie hadn't moved his weapon an inch, still aiming for Ben.
You leave that to me and the keepers to figure out, shuckface.
His hands were perfectly steady as he held the bow, almost as if he had propped it against a branch for support.
Right now, back your scrawny butt down and get to the homestead.
He'll want to take us home,
Ben said.
He'll want to get us out of the maze. Better we all jumped off the cliff. Better we tore each other's guts out.
What are you talking? Thomas began.
Shut your face,
Ben screamed.
Shut your ugly, traitorous face.
Ben, Albie said calmly. I'm going to count to three.
He's bad. He's bad. He's bad.
Ben was whispering now, almost chanting. He swayed back and forth, switching the knife from hand to hand, eyes glued on Thomas.
One.
Bad, 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 bad.
Ben smiled. His teeth seemed to glow, greenish, in the pale light. Thomas wanted to look away, get out of there. But he couldn't move. He was too mesmerized, too scared.
Two.
Albie's voice was louder, filled with warning. Ben, Thomas said, trying to make sense of it all. I'm not... I didn't even know what... Ben screamed, a strangled gurgle of madness, and leaped into the air, slashing out with his blade.
Three!
Albie shouted. There was the sound of snapping wire, the whoosh of an object slicing through the air, the sickening wet thunk of it finding a home. Ben's head snapped violently to the left, twisting his body until he landed on his stomach, his feet pointed toward Thomas. He made no sound. Thomas jumped to his feet and stumbled forward. The long shaft of the arrow stuck from Ben's cheek, the blood surprisingly less than Thomas had expected, but seeping out all the same. Black in the darkness, like oil. The only movement was Ben's right pinky finger, twitching. Thomas fought the urge to puke. Was Ben dead because of him? Was it his fault?
Come on, Albie said. Baggers'll take care of him tomorrow.
What just happened here? Thomas thought, the world tilting around him as he stared at the lifeless body. What did I ever do to this kid? He looked up, wanting answers, but Albie was already gone. A trembling branch, the only sign he'd ever stood there in the first place. Thomas squeezed his eyes against the blinding light of the sun as he emerged from the woods. He was limping, his ankle screaming in pain, though he had no memory of hurting it. He held one hand carefully over the area where he'd been bitten. The other clutched his stomach, as if that would prevent what Thomas now felt was an inevitable barf. The image of Ben's head popped into his mind, cocked at an unnatural angle, blood running down the shaft of the arrow until it collected, dripped, splattered on the ground. The image of it was the last straw. He fell to his knees by one of the scraggly trees on the outskirts of the forest and threw up, retching as he coughed and spat out every last morsel of the acidic, nasty bile from his stomach. His whole body shook, and it seemed like the vomiting would never end. And then, as if his brain were mocking him, trying to make it worse, he had a thought. He'd now been at the glade for roughly 24 hours, one full day. That was it. And look at all the things that had happened. All the terrible things. Surely it could only get better. That night, Thomas lay staring at the sparkling sky, wondering if he'd ever sleep again. Every time he closed his eyes, the monstrous image of Ben leaping at him, the boy's face set in lunacy, filled his mind. Eyes opened or not, he could swear he kept hearing the moist thunk of the arrow slamming into Ben's cheek. Thomas knew he'd never forget those few terrible minutes in the graveyard. "Say something," Chuck said for the fifth time since they'd set out their sleeping bags. "No," Thomas replied, just as he had before. "Everyone knows what happened. It's happened once or twice. Some griever-stung shank flipped out and attacked somebody. Don't think you're special." For the first time, Thomas thought Chuck's personality had gone from mildly irritating to intolerable. "Chuck, be glad I'm not holding Albie's bow right about now." "I'm just play—" "Shut up, Chuck. Go to sleep." Thomas just couldn't handle it right then. Eventually, his buddy did doze off, and based on the rumble of snores across the glade, so did everyone else. Hours later, deep in the night, Thomas was still the only one awake. He wanted to cry, but didn't. He wanted to find Albie and punch him, for no reason whatsoever, but didn't. He wanted to scream and kick and spit and open up the box and jump into the blackness below, but he didn't. He closed his eyes and forced the thoughts and dark images away, and at some point, he fell asleep. Chuck had to drag Thomas out of his sleeping bag in the morning, drag him to the showers, and drag him to the dressing rooms. The whole time, Thomas felt mopey and indifferent, his head aching, his body wanting more sleep. Breakfast was a blur, and an hour after it was over, Thomas couldn't remember what he'd eaten. He was so tired, his brain felt like someone had gone in and stapled it to his skull in a dozen places. Heartburn ravaged his chest. But from what he could tell, naps were frowned upon in the giant working farm of the glade. He stood with Newt in front of the barn of the Bloodhouse, getting ready for his first training session with a keeper. Despite the rough morning, he was actually excited to learn more and for the chance to get his mind off Ben and the graveyard. Cows mooed, sheep bleated, pigs squealed all around him. Somewhere close by, a dog barked, making Thomas hope Frypan didn't bring new meaning to the word hot dog. Hot dog, he thought. When's the last time I had a hot dog? Who did I eat it with?
Tommy, are you even listening to me?
Thomas snapped out of his daze and focused on Newt, who'd been talking for who knew how long. Thomas hadn't heard a word of it.
Yeah, sorry. Couldn't sleep last night.
Newt attempted a pathetic smile.
Can't blame you there. Went through the bug and ringer you did. Probably think I'm a slinthead shank for getting you ready to work your butt off today after an episode the likes of that.
Thomas shrugged. Work's probably the best thing I could do. Anything to get my mind off it. Newt nodded, and his smile became more genuine.
You're as smart as you look, Tommy. That's one of the reasons we run this place all nice and busy-like. You get lazy, you get sad. Start giving up. Plain and simple.
Thomas nodded, absently kicking a loose rock across the dusty, cracked stone floor of the glade.
So, what's the latest on that girl from yesterday?
If anything had penetrated the haze of his long morning, it had been thoughts of her. He wanted to know more about her, understand the odd connection he felt to her.
Still in a coma, sleeping. Medjacks are spoon-feeding her whatever soups Frypan can cook up, checking her vitals and such. She seems okay, just dead to the world for now.
That was just plain weird. If it hadn't been for the whole Ben in the graveyard incident, Thomas was sure she would have been all he'd thought about last night. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to sleep for an entirely different reason. He wanted to know who she was, and if he really did know her somehow.
Yeah, Newt said. Weird's as good a word as any, I expect.
Thomas looked over Newt's shoulder at the big, faded red barn, pushing thoughts of the girl aside.
So, what's first? Milk cows or slaughter some poor little pigs?
Newt laughed, a sound Thomas realized he hadn't heard much since he'd arrived.
We always make the newbies start with the bloody slicers. Don't worry, cutting up fry pan's victuals ain't but a part. Slicers do anything and everything dealing with the beasties.
Too bad I can't remember my whole life. Maybe I love killing animals. He was just joking, but Newt didn't seem to get it. Newt nodded toward the barn.
Oh, you'll know good and well by the time the sun sets tonight. Let's go meet Winston. He's the keeper.
Winston was an acne-covered kid, short but muscular, and it seemed to Thomas the keeper liked his job way too much. Maybe he was sent here for being a serial killer, he thought. Winston showed Thomas around for the first hour, pointing out which pens held which animals, where the chicken and turkey coops were, what went where in the barn. The dog, a pesky black lab named Bark, took quickly to Thomas, hanging at his feet the entire tour. Wondering where the dog came from, Thomas asked Winston, who said Bark had just always been there. Luckily, he seemed to have gotten his name as a joke, because he was pretty quiet. The second hour was spent actually working with the farm animals, feeding, cleaning, fixing a fence, scraping up clunk. Clunk. Thomas found himself using the Glader terms more and more. The third hour was the hardest for Thomas. He had to watch as Winston slaughtered a hog and began preparing its many parts for future eating. Thomas swore two things to himself as he walked away for lunch break. First, his career would not be with the animals. Second, he'd never again eat something that came out of a pig. Winston had said for him to go on alone, that he'd hang around the bloodhouse, which was fine with Thomas. As he walked toward the east door, he couldn't stop picturing Winston in a dark corner of the barn, gnawing on raw pig's feet. The guy gave him the willies. Thomas was just passing the box when he was surprised to see someone enter the glade from the maze, through the west door to his left. An Asian kid with strong arms and short black hair, who looked a little older than Thomas. The runner stopped three steps in, then bent over and put his hands on his knees, gasping for breath. He looked like he'd just run 20 miles, face red, skin covered in sweat, clothes soaked. Thomas stared, overcome with curiosity. He'd yet to see a runner up close or talk to one. Plus, based on the last couple of days, the runner was home hours early. Thomas stepped forward, eager to meet him and ask questions. But before he could form a sentence, the boy collapsed to the ground. Chapter 12. Thomas didn't move for a few seconds. The boy lay in a crumpled heap, barely moving, but Thomas was frozen by indecision, afraid to get involved. What if something was seriously wrong with this guy? What if he'd been stung? What if... Thomas snapped out of it. The runner obviously needed help.
Albie! He shouted. Newt! Somebody get them!
Thomas sprinted to the older boy and knelt down beside him.
Hey, you okay?
The runner's head rested on outstretched arms as he panted, his chest heaving. He was conscious, but Thomas had never seen someone so exhausted.
I'm fine, he said between breaths, then looked up. Who the clunk are you?
I'm new here. It hit Thomas then that the runners were out in the maze during the day and hadn't witnessed any of the recent events firsthand. Did this guy even know about the girl? Probably. Surely someone had told him.
I'm Thomas. Been here just a couple of days.
The runner pushed himself up into a sitting position, his black hair matted to his skull with sweat.
Oh, yeah. Thomas, he huffed. Newbie, you and the chick.
Albie jogged up then, clearly upset.
What are you doing back, Minho? What happened?
Calm your wad, Albie,
the runner replied, seeming to gain strength by the second.
Make yourself useful and get me some water. I dropped my pack out there somewhere.
But Albie didn't move. He kicked Min-ho in the leg, too hard to be playful.
What happened? I can barely talk, Shuckface,
Min-ho yelled, his voice raw.
Get me some water.
Albie looked over at Thomas, who was shocked to see the slightest hint of a smile flash across his face before vanishing in a scowl.
Min-ho's the only shank who can talk to me like that without getting his butt kicked off the cliff.
Then, surprising Thomas even more, Albie turned and ran off, presumably to get Min-ho some water. Thomas turned toward Min-ho.
He let you boss him around?
Min-ho shrugged, then wiped fresh beads of sweat off his forehead.
You scared of that pipsqueak? Dude, you got a lot to learn. Freaking newbies.
The rebuke hurt Thomas far more than it should have, considering he'd known this guy all of 3 minutes.
Isn't he the leader?
A leader?
Min-ho barked a grunt that was probably supposed to be a laugh.
Yeah, call him leader all you want. Maybe we should call him El Presidente.
Nah, Admiral Albie.
There you go.
He rubbed his eyes, snickering as he did so. Thomas didn't know what to make of the conversation. It was hard to tell when Min-ho was joking.
So, who is the leader if he isn't?
Greeny, just shut it before you confuse yourself more.
Min-ho sighed as if bored, then muttered, almost to himself,
Why do you shanks always come in here asking stupid questions? It's really annoying.
What do you expect us to do?
Thomas felt a flush of anger.
Like you were any different when you first came, he wanted to say.
Do what you're told, keep your mouth shut. That's what I expect.
Min-ho had looked him square in the face for the first time with that last sentence, and Thomas scooted back a few inches before he could stop himself. He realized immediately he'd just made a mistake. He couldn't let this guy think he could talk to him like that. He pushed himself back up onto his knees so he was looking down at the older boy.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what you did as a newbie.
Min-ho looked at Thomas carefully, then, again staring straight in his eyes, said,
I was one of the first gladers, Slinthead. Shut your hole till you know what you're talking about.
Thomas, now slightly scared of the guy but mostly fed up with his attitude, moved to get up. Min-ho's hand snapped out and grabbed his arm.
Dude, sit down. I'm just playing with your head. It's too much fun. You'll see when the next newbie...
He trailed off, a perplexed look wrinkling his eyebrows.
Guess there won't be another newbie, huh?
Thomas relaxed, returning to a sitting position, surprised at how easily he'd been put back at ease. He thought of the girl and the note saying she was the last one ever.
Guess not.
Min-ho squinted slightly, as if he was studying Thomas.
You saw the chick, right? Everybody says you probably know her or something.
Thomas felt himself grow defensive.
I saw her. Doesn't really look familiar at all.
He felt immediately guilty for lying, even if it was just a little lie.
She hot?
Thomas paused, not having thought of her in that way since she'd freaked out and delivered the note and her one-liner, Everything is going to change. But he remembered how beautiful she was.
Yeah, I guess she's hot.
Min-ho leaned back until he lay flat, eyes closed.
Yeah, you guess. If you got a thing for chicks in comas, right?
He snickered again.
Right.
Thomas was having the hardest time figuring out if he liked Min-ho or not. His personality seemed to change every minute. After a long pause, Thomas decided to take a chance.
So, he asked cautiously, did you find anything today?
Min-ho's eyes opened wide. He focused on Thomas.
You know what, Greeny? That's usually the dumbest shuck-faced thing you could ask a runner.
He closed his eyes again.
But not today.
What do you mean?
Thomas dared to hope for information.
An answer, he thought. Please give me an answer.
Just wait till the fancy admiral gets back. I don't like saying stuff twice. Plus, he might not want you to hear it anyway.
Thomas sighed. He wasn't in the least bit surprised at the non-answer.
Well, at least tell me why you look so tired. Don't you run out there every day?
Min-ho groaned as he pulled himself up and crossed his legs under him.
Yeah, Greeny.
I run out there every day. Let's just say I got a little excited and ran extra fast to get my behind back here.
Why?
Thomas desperately wanted to hear about what happened out in the maze. Minho threw his hands up.
Dude, I told you.
Patience.
Wait for General Albi.
Something in his voice lessened the blow, and Thomas made his decision. He liked Minho.
Okay, I'll shut up. Just make sure Albi lets me hear the news too.
Minho studied him for a second.
Okay, Greenie. You da boss.
Albi walked up a moment later with a big plastic cup full of water and handed it to Minho, who gulped down the whole thing without stopping once for breath.
Okay, Albi said. Out with it. What happened?
Minho raised his eyebrows and nodded toward Thomas.
He's fine, Albi replied. I don't care what this shank hears. Just talk.
Thomas sat quietly in anticipation as Minho struggled to stand up, wincing with every move, his whole demeanor just screaming exhaustion. The runner balanced himself against the wall, gave both of them a cold look.
I found a dead one.
Huh?
Albi asked.
A dead what?
Minho smiled.
A dead griever.
Chapter 13. Thomas was fascinated at the mention of a griever. The nasty creature was terrifying to think about, but he wondered why finding a dead one was such a big deal. Had it never happened before? Albi looked like someone had just told him he could grow wings and fly.
Ain't a good time for jokes, he said.
Look,
Minho answered.
I wouldn't believe me if I were you either, but trust me, I did. Big fat nasty one.
It's definitely never happened before, Thomas thought.
You found a dead griever,
Albi repeated.
Yes, Albi,
Minho said, his words laced with annoyance.
A couple of miles from here, out near the cliff.
Albi looked out at the maze, then back at Minho.
Well, why didn't you bring it back with you?
Minho laughed again, a half-grunt, half-giggle.
You been drinking fry pan saucy sauce? Those things must weigh half a ton, dude. Plus, I wouldn't touch one if you gave me a free trip out of this place.
Albi persisted with the questions.
What did it look like? Were the metal spikes in or out of its body? Did it move at all? Was its skin still moist?
Thomas was bursting with questions.
Metal spikes? Moist skin? What in the world?
But held his tongue, not wanting to remind them he was there. And that maybe they should talk in private.
Slim it, man, Minho said. You gotta see it for yourself. It's weird.
Weird?
Albi looked confused.
Dude, I'm exhausted, starving, and sunsick. But if you want to haul it right now, we could probably make it there and back before the walls shut.
Albi looked at his watch.
Better wait till the wake-up tomorrow. Smartest thing you've said in a week.
Minho righted himself from leaning on the wall, hit Albi on the arm, then started walking toward the homestead with a slight limp. He spoke over his shoulder as he shuffled away. It looked like his whole body was in pain.
I should go back out there, but screw it. I'm gonna get some of Frypan's nasty casserole.
Thomas felt a wash of disappointment. He had to admit Minho did look like he deserved a rest and a bite to eat, but he wanted to learn more. Then Albi turned to Thomas, surprising him.
If you know something and ain't telling me.
Thomas was sick of being accused of knowing things. Wasn't that the problem in the first place? He didn't know anything. He looked at the boy square in the face and asked simply,
Why do you hate me so much?
The look that came over Albi's face was indescribable. Part confusion, part anger, part shock.
Hate you?
Boy, you ain't learned nothing since showing up in that box. This ain't got nothing to do with no hate or like or love or friends or anything. All we care about is surviving. Drop your sissy side and start using that shuck brain if you got one.
Thomas felt like he'd been slapped.
Why do you keep accusing?
'Cause it can't be coincidence, Slinthead. You pop in here, then we get us a girl newbie the next day, a crazy note, Ben trying to bite you, dead grievers. Something's going on. I ain't resting till I figure it out.
I don't know anything, Albi.
It felt good to put some heat into his words.
I don't even know where I was 3 days ago, much less why this Minho guy would find a dead thing called a Griever. So back off!
Albie leaned back slightly, stared absently at Thomas for several seconds. Then he said,
Slim it, Greeny. Grow up and start thinking. Ain't got nothing to do with accusing nobody of nothing. But if you remember anything, if something even seems familiar, you better start talking. Promise me.
Not until I have a solid memory, Thomas thought. Not unless I want to share.
Yeah, I guess, but just promise.
Thomas paused, sick of Albie and his attitude.
Whatever, he finally said. I promise.
At that, Albie turned and walked away, not saying another word. Thomas found a tree in the Deadheads, one of the nicer ones on the edge of the forest with plenty of shade. He dreaded going back to work with Winston the Butcher, and knew he needed to eat lunch, but he didn't want to be near anybody for as long as he could get away with it. Leaning back against the thick trunk, he wished for a breeze but didn't get one. He'd just felt his eyelids droop when Chuck ruined the peace and quiet.
Thomas! Thomas!
The boy shrieked as he ran toward him, pumping his arms, his face lit up with excitement. Thomas rubbed his eyes and groaned. He wanted nothing in the world more than a half-hour nap. It wasn't until Chuck stopped right in front of him, panting to catch his breath, that he finally looked up.
What?
Words slowly fell from Chuck, in between his gasps for breath.
Ben! Ben! He isn't dead!
All signs of fatigue catapulted out of Thomas's system. He jumped up to stand nose to nose with Chuck.
What? He isn't dead. Baggers went to get him. Arrow missed his brain. Medjax patched him up.
Thomas turned away to stare into the forest where the sick boy had attacked him just the night before.
You gotta be kidding. I saw him.
He wasn't dead? Thomas didn't know what he felt most strongly. Confusion, relief, fear that he'd be attacked again.
Well, so did I,
Chuck said.
He's locked up in the slammer, a huge bandage covering half his head.
Thomas spun to face Chuck again.
The slammer? What do you mean?
The slammer. It's our jail on the north side of the homestead.
Chuck pointed in that direction.
They threw him in it so fast, the medjacks had to patch him up in there.
Thomas rubbed his eyes. Guilt consumed him when he realized how he truly felt. He'd been relieved that Ben was dead, that he didn't have to worry about facing him again.
So what are they going to do with him?
Already had a gathering of the keepers this morning. Made a unanimous decision by the sounds of it. Looks like Ben'll be wishing that arrow had found a home inside his shuck brain after all.
Thomas squinted, confused by what Chuck had said.
What are you talking about?
He's being banished. Tonight, for trying to kill you.
Banished? What does that mean?
Thomas had to ask, though he knew it couldn't be good if Chuck thought it was worse than being dead. And then Thomas saw perhaps the most disturbing thing he'd seen since he'd arrived at the glade. Chuck didn't answer. He only smiled. Smiled, despite it all. Despite the sinister sound of what he'd just announced. Then he turned and ran, maybe to tell someone else the exciting news. That night, Newt and Albie gathered every last glader at the east door about a half hour before it closed, the first traces of twilight's dimness creeping across the sky. The runners had just returned and entered the mysterious map room, clanging the iron door shut. Minho had already gone in earlier. Albie told the runners to hurry about their business. He wanted them back out in 20 minutes. It still bothered Thomas how Chuck had smiled when breaking the news about Ben being banished. Though he didn't know exactly what it meant, it certainly didn't sound like a good thing, especially since they were all standing so close to the maze.
Are they going to put him out there? He wondered. With the Grievers?
The other gladers murmured their conversations in hushed tones, an intense feeling of dreadful anticipation hanging over them like a patch of thick fog. But Thomas said nothing, standing with arms folded, waiting for the show. He stood quietly until the runners finally came out of their building, all of them looking exhausted, their faces pinched from deep thinking. Minho had been the first to exit, which made Thomas wonder if he was the keeper of the runners.
"Bring him out!" Albi shouted,
startling Thomas out of his thoughts. His arms fell to his sides as he turned, looking around the glade for a sign of Ben, trepidation building within him as he wondered what the boy would do when he saw him. From around the far side of the homestead, three of the bigger boys appeared, literally dragging Ben along the ground. His clothes were tattered, barely hanging on. A bloody, thick bandage covered half his head and face. Refusing to put his feet down or help the progress in any way, he seemed as dead as the last time Thomas had seen him. Except for one thing. His eyes were open, and they were wide with terror.
"Newt," Albi said in a much quieter voice. Thomas wouldn't have heard him if he hadn't been standing just a few feet away.
"Bring out the pole."
Newt nodded, already on the move toward a small tool shed used for the gardens. He'd clearly been waiting for the order. Thomas turned his focus back to Ben and the guards. The pale, miserable boy still made no effort to resist, letting them drag him across the dusty stone of the courtyard. When they reached the crowd, they pulled Ben to his feet in front of Albi, their leader, where Ben hung his head, refusing to make eye contact with anyone.
"You brought this on yourself, Ben," Albi said.
Then he shook his head and looked toward the shack to which Newt had gone. Thomas followed his gaze just in time to see Newt walk through the slanted door. He was holding several aluminum poles, connecting the ends to make a shaft maybe 20 feet long. When he was finished, he grabbed something odd-shaped on one of the ends and dragged the whole thing along toward the group. A shiver ran up Thomas's spine at the metallic scrape of the pole on the stone ground as Newt walked. Thomas was horrified by the whole affair. He couldn't help feeling responsible, even though he'd never done anything to provoke Ben. How was any of this his fault? No answer came to him, but he felt the guilt all the same, like a disease in his blood. Finally, Newt stepped up to Albi and handed over the end of the pole he was holding. Thomas could see the strange attachment now, a loop of rough leather fastened to the metal with a massive staple. A large button snap revealed that the loop could be opened and closed, and its purpose became obvious. It was a collar. Chapter 14. Thomas watched as Albi unbuttoned the collar, then wrapped it around Ben's neck. Ben finally looked up just as the loop of leather snapped closed with a loud pop. Tears glistened in his eyes. Dribbles of snot oozed from his nostrils. The gladers looked on, not a word from any of them.
"Please, Albi,"
Ben pleaded, his shaky voice so pathetic that Thomas couldn't believe it was the same guy who'd tried to bite his throat off the day before.
"I swear, I was just sick in the head from the changing. I never would have killed him. Just lost my mind for a second. Please, Albi, please."
Every word from the kid was like a fist punching Thomas in the gut, making him feel more guilty and confused. Albi didn't respond to Ben. He pulled on the collar to make sure it was both firmly snapped and solidly attached to the long pole. He walked past Ben and along the pole, picking it up off the ground as he slid its length through his palm and fingers. When he reached the end, he gripped it tightly and turned to face the crowd. Eyes bloodshot, face wrinkled in anger, breathing heavily. To Thomas, he suddenly looked evil. And it was an odd sight on the other side. Ben, trembling, crying, a roughly cut collar of old leather wrapped around his pale, scrawny neck, attached to a long pole that stretched from him to Albi, 20 feet away. The shaft of aluminum bowed in the middle, but only a little. Even from where Thomas was standing, it looked surprisingly strong. Albi spoke in a loud, almost ceremonious voice, looking at no one and everyone at the same time.
"Ben of the Builders, you've been sentenced to banishment for the attempted murder of Thomas the Newbie. The keepers have spoken, and their word ain't changing. And you ain't coming back. Ever."
A long pause.
"Keepers, take your place on the banishment pole."
Thomas hated that his link to Ben was being made public, hated the responsibility he felt. Being the center of attention again could only bring more suspicion about him. His guilt transformed into anger and blame. More than anything, he just wanted Ben gone, wanted it all to be over. One by one, boys were stepping out of the crowd and walking over to the long pole. They grabbed it with both hands, gripped it as if readying for a tug-of-war match. Newt was one of them, as was Min-ho, confirming Thomas's guess that he was the keeper of the runners. Winston the Butcher also took up a position. Once they were all in place, 10 keepers spaced evenly apart between Albie and Ben, the air grew still and silent. The only sounds were the muffled sobs of Ben, who kept wiping at his nose and eyes. He was looking left and right, though the collar around his neck prevented him from seeing the pole and keepers behind him. Thomas's feelings changed again. Something was obviously wrong with Ben. Why did he deserve this fate? Couldn't something be done for him? Would Thomas spend the rest of his days feeling responsible? "Just end," he screamed in his head. "Just be over."
"Please,"
Ben said, his voice rising in desperation.
"Please, somebody help me. You can't do this to me."
"Shut up," Albie roared from behind. But Ben ignored him, pleading for help as he started to pull on the leather looped around his neck.
"Someone stop them, help me, please."
He glanced from boy to boy, begging with his eyes. Without fail, everyone looked away. Thomas quickly stepped behind a taller boy to avoid his own confrontation with Ben. "I can't look into those eyes again," he thought. "If we let shanks like you get away with that stuff," Albie said, "we never would have survived this long. Keepers, get ready."
"No, no, 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 no,"
Ben was saying half under his breath.
"I swear I'll do anything. I swear I'll never do it again. Please!"
His shrill cry was cut off by the rumbling crack of the east door beginning to close. Sparks flew from the stone as the massive right wall slid to the left, groaning thunderously as it made its journey to close off the glade from the maze for the night. The ground shook beneath them, and Thomas didn't know if he could watch what he knew was going to happen next. "Keepers, now!" Albie shouted. Ben's head snapped back as he was jerked forward, the keepers pushing the pole toward the maze outside the glade. A strangling cry erupted from Ben's throat, louder than the sounds of the closing door. He fell to his knees, only to be jerked back to his feet by the keeper in front, a thick guy with black hair and a snarl on his face.
"No!"
Ben screamed, spit flying from his mouth as he thrashed about, tearing at the collar with his hands. But the combined strength of the keepers was way too much, forcing the condemned boy closer and closer to the edge of the glade, just as the right wall was almost there.
"No!"
he screamed again, and then again. He tried to plant his feet at the threshold, but it only lasted for a split second. The pole sent him into the maze with a lurch. Soon he was fully 4 feet outside the glade, jerking his body from side to side as he tried to escape his collar. The walls of the door were only seconds from sealing shut. With one last violent effort, Ben was finally able to twist his neck in the circle of leather so that his whole body turned to face the gladers. Thomas couldn't believe he was still looking upon a human being. The madness in Ben's eyes, the phlegm flying from his mouth, the pale skin stretched taut across his veins and bones. He looked as alien as anything Thomas could imagine.
"Hold!"
Albie shouted. Ben screamed then, without a pause, a sound so piercing that Thomas covered his ears. It was a bestial, lunatic cry, surely ripping the boy's vocal cords to shreds. At the last second, the front keeper somehow loosened the larger pole from the piece attached to Ben and yanked it back into the glade, leaving the boy to his banishment. Ben's final screams were cut off when the walls closed with a terrible boom. Thomas squeezed his eyes shut and was surprised to feel tears trickling down his cheeks. Chapter 15. For the second night in a row, Thomas went to bed with the haunted image of Ben's face burned into his mind, tormenting him. How different would things be right now if it weren't for that one boy?
Thomas could almost convince himself he'd be completely content, happy and excited to learn his new life, aim for his goal of being a runner. Almost. Deep down, he knew that Ben was only part of his many problems. But now he was gone, banished to the world of the grievers, taken to wherever they took their prey, victim to whatever was done there. Though he had plenty of reasons to despise Ben, he mostly felt sorry for him. Thomas couldn't imagine going out that way, but based on Ben's last moments, psychotically thrashing and spitting and screaming, he no longer doubted the importance of the Glade rule that no one should enter the maze except runners, and then only during the day. Somehow, Ben had already been stung once, which meant he knew better than perhaps anyone just exactly what lay in store for him. That poor guy, he thought. That poor, poor guy. Thomas shuddered and rolled over on his side. The more he thought about it, being a runner didn't sound like such a great idea. But inexplicably, it still called to him. The next morning, dawn had barely touched the sky before the working sounds of the Glade wakened Thomas from the deepest slumber since he'd arrived. He sat up, rubbing his eyes, trying to shake the heavy grogginess. Giving up, he lay back down, hoping no one would bother him. It didn't last a minute. Someone tapped his shoulder, and he opened his eyes to see Newt staring down at him. What now? He thought.
Get up, you lug.
Yeah, good morning to you, too. What time is it?
7 o'clock, Greeny, Newt said with a mocking smile. Figure I'd let you sleep in after such a rough couple days.
Thomas rolled into a sitting position, hating that he couldn't just lie there for another few hours.
Sleep in? What are you guys, a bunch of farmers?
Farmers. How did he remember so much about them? Once again, his memory wipe baffled him.
Yeah, now that you mention it.
Newt plopped down beside Thomas and folded his legs up under himself. He sat quietly for a few moments, looking out at all the hustle-bustle starting to whip across the glade.
Gonna put you with a track hose today, Greeny. See if that suits your fancy more than slicing up bloody piggies and such.
Thomas was sick of being treated like a baby.
Aren't you supposed to quit calling me that?
What, bloody piggies? Thomas forced a laugh and shook his head.
No, Greeny. I'm not really the newest newbie anymore, right?
The girl in the coma is. Call her Greeny. My name's Thomas. Thoughts of the girl crashed around his mind, made him remember the connection he felt. A sadness washed over him, as if he missed her, wanted to see her. That doesn't make sense, he thought. I don't even know her name.
Newt leaned back, eyebrows raised. Burn me, you grew some right nice-sized eggs overnight now, didn't you?
Thomas ignored him and moved on.
What's a track hoe?
It's what we call the guys working their butts off in the gardens. Tilling, weeding, planting and such.
Thomas nodded in that direction.
Who's the keeper?
Zart. Nice guy, so long as you don't slough on the job, that is. He's the big one that stood in front last night.
Thomas didn't say anything to that, hoping that somehow he could go through the entire day without talking about Ben and the banishment. The subject only made him sick and guilty, so he moved on to something else.
So, why'd you come wake me up?
What, don't like seeing my face first thing on the wake-up?
Not especially, so...
But before he could finish his sentence, the rumble of the walls opening for the day cut him off. He looked toward the east door, almost expecting to see Ben standing there on the other side. Instead, he saw Min-ho stretching. Then Thomas watched as he walked over and picked something up. It was the section of pull with the leather collar attached to it. Min-ho seemed to think nothing of it, throwing it to one of the other runners, who went and put it back in the tool shed near the gardens. Thomas turned back to Newt, confused. How could Min-ho act so nonchalant about it all?
What the?
Only seen 3 banishments, Tommy. All as nasty as the one you peeped on last night.
But every buggin' time, the grievers leave the collar on our doorstep. Gives me the willies like nothing else.
Thomas had to agree. What do they do with people when they catch them? Did he really want to know? Newt just shrugged, his indifference not very convincing.
More likely, he didn't want to talk about it.
So tell me about the runners, Thomas said suddenly. The words seemed to pop out of nowhere. But he remained still, despite an odd urge to apologize and change the subject.
He wanted to know everything about them. Even after what he'd seen last night, even after witnessing the Griever through the window, he wanted to know. The pull to know was strong, and he didn't quite understand why. Becoming a runner just felt like something he was born to do.
Newt had paused, looking confused.
The runners? Why?
Just wondering? Newt gave him a suspicious look.
Best of the best, those guys. Have to be. Everything depends on them.
He picked up a loose rock and tossed it, watching it absently as it bounced to a stop.
Why aren't you one?
Newt's gaze returned to Thomas sharply.
Was till I hurt my leg 2 months back. Hasn't been the bloody same since.
He reached down and rubbed his right ankle absently, a brief look of pain flashing across his face. The look made Thomas think it was more from the memory, not any actual physical pain he still felt.
How do you do it?
Thomas asked, thinking the more he could get Newt to talk, the more he'd learn.
Running from the buggin' grievers, what else? Almost got me.
He paused.
Still gives me the chills thinking I might have gone through the changing.
The changing. It was the one topic that Thomas thought might lead him to answers more than anything else.
What is that, anyway?
What changes?
Does everyone go psycho like Ben and start trying to kill people? Ben was way worse than most. But I thought you wanted to talk about the runners.
Newt's tone warned that the conversation about the changing was over. This made Thomas even more curious, though he was just fine going back to the subject of runners.
Okay, I'm listening. Like I said, best of the best.
So what do? Test everybody to see how fast they are? Newt gave Thomas a disgusted look, then groaned.
Show me some smart, screeny, Tommy, whatever you like. How fast you can bloody run is only part of it. A very small part, actually.
This piqued Thomas's interest.
What do you mean? When I say best of the best, I mean it everything. To survive the buggin' maze, you gotta be smart, quick, strong. Gotta be a decision maker, know the right amount of risk to take. Can't be reckless, can't be timid either.
Newt straightened his legs and leaned back on his hands.
It's bloody awful out there, you know. I don't miss it.
I thought the Grievers only came out at night. Destiny or not, Thomas didn't want to run into one of those things.
Yeah, usually.
Then why is it so terrible out there? What else didn't he know about? Newt sighed.
Pressure. Stress. Maze pattern different every day. Trying to picture things in your mind, trying to get us out of here. Worrying about the bloody maps. Worst part, you're always scared you might not make it back.
A normal maze would be hard enough, but when it changes every night, a couple of mental mistakes and you're spending the night with vicious beasts. No room or time for dummies or brats. Thomas frowned, not quite understanding the drive inside him, urging him on. Especially after last night.
But he still felt it.
Felt it all over.
Why all the interest? Newt asked.
Thomas hesitated, thinking, scared to say it out loud again.
I want to be a runner.
Newt turned and looked him in the eye.
Haven't been here a week, Shank. Little early for death wishes, don't you think? I'm serious.
It barely made sense even to Thomas, but he felt it deeply. In fact, the desire to become a runner was the only thing driving him on, helping him accept his predicament. Newt didn't break his gaze.
So am I. Forget it. No one's ever become a runner in their first month, much less their first week. Got a lot of proving to do before we'll recommend you to the keeper.
Thomas stood and started folding up his sleeping gear.
Newt, I mean it. I can't pull weeds all day. I'll go nuts. I don't have a clue what I did before they shipped me here in that metal box, but my gut tells me that being a runner is what I'm supposed to do. I can do it.
Newt still sat there, staring up at Thomas, not offering to help.
No one said you couldn't. But give it a rest for now.
Thomas felt a surge of impatience.
But listen, trust me on this, Tommy. Start stomping around this place yapping about how you're too good to work like a peasant, how you're all nice and ready to be a runner. You'll make plenty of enemies. Drop it for now.
Making enemies was the last thing Thomas wanted, but still. He decided on another direction.
Fine.